Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, our top story is San Diego Gas and Electric Company trying to charge ratepayers for its wildfire settlement costs, and we'll have details. Over in La Mesa, restaurant owners are upset over a sidewalk project that's taken more than a year and how that's impacting their businesses. A bill on the governor's desk would give motorists the right to fight traffic tickets for free. And in other good news for motorists, if you have unpaid traffic fines or you lost your license due to unpaid fines, you're in luck. You may be eligible for amnesty. The Helix Water District has rescinded penalties on its highest tier water users thanks to conservation, but there's a hefty water rate hike on the horizon for everyone, and we'll have details. The principal at Santana High School is warning about a man in a white pickup truck who's been stalking teenage girls. A recall of horse feed that's been sold in San Diego County has been linked to the deaths of horses in Northern California, so if you're a horse owner or you board horses, be sure to listen in for this story. The county has released a wildfire risk map where you can look up the risk for a fire in your community as well as get emergency information. A driver in East County has been charged with murder following the death of a pedestrian that was struck. Our newsmaker interviews today are with a Lyme disease victim and her mother, and they're going to talk about efforts by local Lyme disease victims as well as Lyme disease survivors around the country to stage protests at a major medical convention this weekend in San Diego. On the second half of our show today, our Destination East County host, Ariel Johansson, will be here with some top events coming up around East County, including Oktoberfests and a fall festival. We'll also be replaying our interview with wheelchair dancers. And then on Public News Service, here's some top daily news headlines today from around the nation, including calls for something to be done about gun control in the wake of yet another mass shooting. A school bond measure has qualified for the California ballot. And on our agricultural report, we'll have the buzz about a new beekeeping ordinance in the backcountry. We'll have all of these stories today and much more, so be sure to stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, where East County matters. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is asking the California Public Utilities Commission for permission to charge ratepayers 90% of SDG&E's remaining costs to settle 2,500 lawsuits from the 2007 firestorms. SDG&E faced $4 billion in claims arising from those fires, but settled most of the cases for about $2.4 billion. Most of it was covered by the company's liability insurance or recoveries from third parties. Now, SDG&E wants its shareholders to pay only 10%, with the remaining 90% to be passed on to ratepayers. The Reader reporter Don Bowder has labeled this plan a brazen scheme. If approved, SDG&E would spread out the remaining $379 million over 6 years, which it estimates would raise monthly bills less than $1.70 per typical residential customer using about 500 kilowatt hours of electricity a month. By contrast, a poll of East County, California newspaper readers found that 100% of them believe that SDG and its shareholders, not ratepayers, should bear responsibility for wildfire settlement costs. Lee Chavrian, Chief Administrative Officer for SDG&E, states, "We have gone to great lengths to minimize the impact to our customers by successfully settling those lawsuits, rather than taking them to trial, which would have been significantly more costly. At least one case remains unsettled, by a plaintiff who has told us she wants to take her case to trial and have evidence admitted in a publicly accessible record." Dr. Christine Ross has advised East County Magazine that she's currently seeking new legal counsel to represent her at a trial. Ross, a veterinarian, contends the fires were caused by a dangerous design flaw in SDG&E lines that has not been corrected, and she wants to have an expert witness, Ed Clark, present testimony in court. Clark is the author of Circle the Wagons, SDG&E, the Perfect Corporate Cover-Up. He's an electrical installation expert who formerly worked for a major utility company and has been hired as an expert witness by SDG&E in the past. SDG&E has repeatedly denied his allegations. SDG&E, by contrast, contends it has taken steps to improve safety, including installing over 170 weather stations, the largest and most concentrated weather network in the nation, SDG&E states in a press release. Each circuit in high-risk fire threat zones in the backcountry has at least one weather station now to provide wind speed, temperature, and humidity every 10 minutes to evaluate impact of weather on system operations. Steve Vanderberg, senior meteorologist for the utility company, says Santa Anta winds in 2007 near where the Witch Creek fire started were blowing at over 90 miles an hour. That's almost as strong as a Category 2 hurricane. A CPUC investigation faulted SDG&E lines along with Cox Cable for causing some of the most devastating 2000 wildfires, although SDG&E has never admitted fault and contends that the high winds also played a role in the ignition and spread of the fires. The CPUC is expected to make a final decision on the proposal to charge ratepayers for those costs in the first quarter of 2017. Attorney Mike Aguirre has sent a public records request to the CPUC asking for all correspondence with SDG&E and its officials regarding passing along costs of the 2007 wildfire settlements to ratepayers. The 2007 fires killed two people and destroyed over 1,300 homes, sparked evacuation of 500,000 people, and burned hundreds of thousands of acres across our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barreno with a local business report. East County Magazine reporter Mike Allen has been speaking with restaurant owners in La Mesa, where some say the city's downtown village streetscape improvement project has caused a much worse hit on their businesses than anticipated. And now the owners aren't happy about having to shell out even more money to get their patio seating back. While the project that began construction in July of last year is nearly finished, there's still work to be done, and most restaurants haven't had their outside patios reinstalled in time for this weekend's big Oktoberfest celebration. Carol Telasco owns Centifoni's Restaurant and Cornichiwa Sushi, both in the downtown village. This has taken a toll on everyone, she says. Telasco said she supported the improvement project and its goal of making the neighborhood safer and more pedestrian-friendly, but adds, it's taken too long a time and it's affecting everyone's sales. Both her restaurants have lost a great deal of revenue during the past year, with customers avoiding the construction zone that has torn up La Mesa Boulevard through the heart of downtown. As of last week, Telasco still wasn't sure whether she would be able to replace the outside seating that she had before the project began, in time to capitalize on crowds expected during Oktoberfest on Saturday and Sunday. The city is requiring restaurants with patio seating to have a permit and show proof of certain levels of liability insurance coverage before the seating is installed, Telasco said. David Chiodo, owner of Tiramisu Trattoria, said he's hoping to get his patio and railing back, but he's been told it will cost a lot more to get higher insurance coverage. He said, "They tell me it's going to cost another $600 to $700 a month, and that's money I don't have." He estimated his business has lost between $40,000 to $50,000 in sales due to the construction. At one point, he even considered closing the restaurant he opened 11 years ago, and he will likely lose more if he cannot reinstall the restaurant's outdoor seating for Oktoberfest, he said. "A lot of people think we're closed and they haven't come back," Chiota said, adding, "Maybe the city is trying to kill the small guy." Greg Humora, La Mesa Director of Public Works, said long before the construction began, the city undertook an extensive public outreach program contacting all the affected businesses in the neighborhood to let them know how the project would be phased in and what things the city could do to accommodate the businesses during construction. "Our intent was to minimize the impacts to businesses as best we could," Humora said. The work was done in phases that allowed La Mesa Boulevard to remain open throughout the construction. City staffers met with most of the business owners to give them more details of how the project would be done and to ask them about their particular needs. Humora said while the city requires restaurants with outdoor patio seating to have a permit, there is no fee for the permit. A change in state regulations covering such patios may result in some restaurants having to provide higher liability coverage, but he couldn't say what the additional cost would be. "Unfortunately, we live in a very litigious society, and sometimes having $1 million in liability coverage just isn't enough," he observed. Telasco said the downtown street improvements were long overdue, especially the added lighting, to make patrons, many of whom are elderly, feel safer. But the year-long project kept customers away due to difficulty finding parking, she indicated. Telasco declined to comment on a pending lawsuit she filed against the city in July 2014. The complaint alleges negligence over damage that occurred to Centifoni's restaurant floor, caused by roots from a city-owned tree that has since been removed. The city has refused to pay a damage claim submitted by Telasco. At least two local eateries in downtown La Mesa, San Felipos and Cosmos Coffee, have closed down in recent weeks, both faulting the lengthy streetscape project at least in part for negatively impacting their businesses. Projects that are similar to La Mesa's street improvements have been done in many other county cities, all intending to attract tourists and local residents to aging and deteriorating downtown sections. In El Cajon, a similar street improvement project was completed about 3 years ago and has spurred increased pedestrian traffic to that city's core. El Cajon Councilman Gary Kendrick said of his city's upgrades, "It's been quite a success," adding that outdoor concerts in downtown El Cajon are now drawing crowds of several thousand people. Whether La Mesa's downtown streetscape improvements will ultimately boost businesses sufficiently to make up for what business owners lost due to construction, however, remains to be seen.
Currently, California drivers who want to challenge a ticket in court have to pay a fine or a fee first in many jurisdictions. But Senate Bill 405, now awaiting Governor Jerry Brown's approval, would give motorists the right to fight tickets without paying a fine or a fee unless they are found guilty. The U.S. justice system is supposed to presume innocence until someone is found guilty. But traffic fines and add-on fees amount to hundreds of dollars in some cases. The American Civil Liberties Union has argued that those fees block access to the justice system for the poor. That has caused over 4 million California residents to lose their driver's license because they couldn't afford to pay fines for traffic violations or didn't appear in court, often because they lacked the money to pay. Senate Bill 405 passed the legislature almost unanimously, with only a single vote cast against letting motorists fight tickets free. The governor has until October 11th to sign or veto the measure, after already signing a second measure that grants partial amnesty to Californians with overdue traffic fines. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tasha Matthews.
If you are a California driver with an overdue traffic ticket fine, you may be eligible for a limited amnesty program starting this week under Senate Bill 85, which was signed into law by Governor Brown. Under the program, all fines due on or before January 1st, 2013 will be reduced by 50 to 80%. In addition, all penalties added for late fees will be canceled. You can also make payments to pay off the balance based on your income. In addition, if you lost your license for failing to pay a fine or appear in court, you can apply to get your license restored. The amnesty program starts October 1st of this year and runs through March 2017. It covers most moving violations, including speeding, stop sign, and red light violations. It also includes some non-traffic violations, such as littering, trespassing, and loitering. You cannot get amnesty for driving under the influence or reckless driving and certain other major vehicle code violations. The amnesty is also not available for violations of local ordinances. To apply, contact the Superior Court in the jurisdiction where your ticket was issued. The court can charge a $50 fee, plus the Department of Motor Vehicles will assess a $55 fee to reinstate a driver's license. California has drawn sharp criticism for hefty fines and extra fees that in some cases amount to quadruple the original fines. Consumer and civil rights groups have argued that this is discriminatory towards minorities and the poor. Losing a driver's license can also cost drivers their jobs if they can't afford to pay the fines. Out of 4.73 million Californians with licenses suspended by courts for failure to pay or show up in court, only 82,000 have been reinstated. An amnesty program not only helps drivers get back on their feet and have a second chance, but also puts money in the state's treasury. An earlier amnesty program in 2012 brought in $12.3 million. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barrena.
Helix Water District's board has voted unanimously to rescind a 10% penalty assessed on its highest tier water users. The change comes after customers cut water use 28%, enabling the district to meet the 20% cuts mandated by the state. Helix board member Kathleen Hedberg asked for those who were penalized to receive rebates, but instead the funds will be used for water conservation outreach. Despite this short-term break for the largest water users, the district is moving forward on plans to hike rates for all water customers. The Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association, or GMIA, opposes what it describes as a 70% rate hike over 5 years, potentially. The GMIA has now posted a sample letter on its website at gmia.net for members of the public to submit if they wish to protest the proposed rate hike. In a recent California court case, a judge held that it is illegal for water districts to charge more than the actual delivery cost of water, making it questionable how Helix could predict its water costs 5 years ahead of time. Ratepayers have already absorbed recent rate increases and fear that new rate hikes would cause economic hardship or result in loss of trees and orchards in an already high fire risk area. The Helix Water District will host an official public hearing at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, October 7th, at the district headquarters in La Mesa for people who wish to learn more or protest the rate hike in person. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
The principal of Santana High School is warning parents in a letter about two incidents last week in which female students were reportedly followed by a man in a white Chevrolet pickup truck. Students described the driver as a clean-shaven Latino or Indian man in his late 20s. He wore a baseball hat and a dark T-shirt and had a toolbox in the truck bed. The incidents occurred at Mass Boulevard and Magnolia Avenue in Santee on two separate occasions, according to the principal. If you see a vehicle and driver matching this description near the school, please call the Sheriff's Department.
This is Tasha Matthews with an important bulletin for horse owners and those boarding horses for others. A horse feed sold in San Diego County has been linked to deaths of three horses and illnesses of a dozen more. Western Blend horse feed, manufactured by Western Milling, contains monacin, an ionosphore that is allowed in cattle feed to put weight on cattle, but it is toxic to horses, and there is no antidote for the poisoning. On Sunday, the company announced a recall of Western Blend sold in 50-pound bags in California and Arizona with a lot number 5251. ABC News reports the deaths occurred in Fresno. Ionophore poisoning can cause loss of appetite, diarrhea, weakness, rapid heart rate, breathing problems, wobbling gait, sweating, colic, and sudden death. Symptoms appear 12 to 72 hours after ingestion and can last up to 8 days. In horses that survive a toxic dose, permanent heart damage can occur. Western Milling Recalls Notice advises that 1,100 bags identified with the hazardous additive, all but 67 have been found. If you purchased this feed, you can return it for a full refund. If you fed this product to your horses, contact the veterinarian immediately.
This is Marilyn Lyons from East County Magazine with some important news on wildfire safety. As San Diego County enters the perilous fall wildfire season, you can now tap into a new online map to learn the level of fire risk in your immediate area and resources for finding help in an emergency. This digital tool allows San Diegans to search the county by address or place name in order to learn the degree of wildfire hazard and how to better prepare for an emergency. Many of the county's biggest blazes have struck this fall, fed by Santa Ana winds and tinderbox conditions in the backcountry. Supervisor Diane Jacob says wildfire is a year-round threat in our region, but fall can be especially brutal. The online map is an eye-opening reminder of the risks we face, but it also provides critical information on fire protection and preparedness. A link to the new wildfire hazard map can be found at www.readysandiego.org. It draws on existing data collected by California fire officials to assess conditions on properties statewide. The map shows large areas of the county, mostly in the backcountry, are high to very high hazard zones as defined by state officials. Other areas fall into moderate category or are not considered a serious risk. When an address or place name is entered, the map provides the hazard designation along with related links and information, including the names of the fire protection agency for that location, the closest fire station, and a detailed guide to fire preparedness. Many addresses also provide contact information for the local Fire Safe Council, a network of nonprofits that promote fire safety and preparedness. The map is available on both desktop and mobile devices.
This is Tasha Matthews with a Crime Beat report. A woman whose vehicle struck an older couple outside a lakeside restaurant Friday is now under arrest. 21-year-old Katie Ellison has been charged with murder and a felony driving under the influence, the California Highway Patrol reports. She was reportedly driving with her headlights off at around 10:15 p.m. on Woodside Avenue near Winter Gardens Boulevard when she plowed into a couple crossing the street after a dinner out. Ellison and the people she hit were also transported to hospitals for treatment of major injuries. Lorraine Kennedy, a grandmother, died in the hospital, NBC News reports. Her husband also suffered major injuries.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, I am delighted to introduce Maritza Pageant and her daughter, Elise Leverett. Elise is a Lyme disease patient, and they are involved in a protest that's going to be taking place in San Diego against a major medical organization, and they're advocating for better treatment for Lyme disease patients. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
So tell us what organization is coming to town for its annual convention and when that'll be.
The Infectious Disease Society of America is having its annual convention here October 7th through the 11th, and we have demonstrations planned on October 9th and 10th.
Okay. Tell us why you're protesting them.
The Infectious Disease Society has outdated guidelines, which basically deny proper diagnosis and treatment for chronic Lyme disease.
Yeah, essentially they're saying chronic Lyme disease doesn't really
exist,
that it's sort of like chronic fatigue syndrome, that the symptoms are vague and so forth. But your experience shows otherwise. Tell us what evidence there is to support a diagnosis of chronic Lyme disease and the long-term antibiotic treatment, which is what this medical association is standing in the way of.
There's lots of current research that they exclude from their guidelines. UC Davis has done mice studies which show persistence of chronic infection from Lyme disease even after intravenous antibiotic treatment.
We should mention that there are three organizations that are participating in the protest: LymeDisease.org, the Mayday Project, and the San Diego Lyme Disease Support Group. How many people are you expecting will turn out?
We anticipate at least 500. We have people traveling in from the East Coast and all over the country.
Wow. And where is it going to be?
We will be stationed right outside the San Diego Convention Center on Harbor Drive, Harbor Boulevard, 9 to 3 on both Friday and Saturday. And we're having a candlelight vigil in honor of those who have passed from Lyme disease on Friday evening, starting at 6 p.m.
Now, Lyme disease is carried by ticks. And for those of you that think you don't need to worry about that in San Diego, guess what? According to the County Health Department, I checked, Lyme disease is found here. There are cases of it that have been contracted from ticks right here in San Diego County, especially in the backcountry area. So it's definitely a concern for people here as well as folks who've contracted it elsewhere. Elise, I'd like you to share your experience with this. Now, you are a Lyme disease patient. When did you contract it and where?
I contracted Lyme disease in July of 2006, and it took 10 months and 16 doctors around the country to get just a diagnosis for anyone to even test for it, because the doctors also have outdated information that Lyme disease doesn't exist in San Diego and it doesn't even exist on the West Coast.
And you were bitten by a tick in Kern County. You knew right away you'd been bitten. You found it in your hair, and yet they still refused to test.
Yes.
Shocking.
Yes.
So fast forward a little bit. What happened with your treatment? After all these months, when they finally confirmed that you do have Lyme disease, the tests are very conclusive on that, I understand.
Yes. I was CDC positive. The Center for Disease Control called us and said, well, you know, she actually does have Lyme disease, and you need to get her on antibiotics right away. And after 3 years of oral antibiotics as well as IV antibiotics, I was in remission.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, once it becomes chronic, there is no cure. The bacteria, it's impossible to completely eradicate from your system. So at any time, you could come out of remission from a car accident or any sort of stress on your body can reactivate.
Happened to you. You were in a couple of car accidents, and now you're in a wheelchair. You're a young woman. How old are you?
I am 23 years old, and I am out of remission again. I'm in a wheelchair.
I have seizures and tremors. I'm often completely nonverbal. And
these were, you said you've told me, very minor, low-speed car accidents. Yes. It wasn't injury from the accident. It was...
It is a reactivation of the bacteria itself.
I'd like to educate listeners a little bit about how to tell if you might have Lyme disease. Obviously, if you know you've been bitten by a tick, you should, what, go to the doctor?
Right away.
Okay. Absolutely. If you can, save the tick, because the county health department will actually test the tick,
really?
Yes. Which is super, super accurate.
And how do you remove the tick if it's embedded itself in you?
Do not ever burn. Do not ever put Vaseline. You do not want to stress the tick out, because they will secrete whatever is in them and stresses them out, and they spit everything in them back
so
into you.
Do you go to the doctor and have them remove it, or what?
You can. You don't have to wait to do that, though. Mm-hmm. There are proper tick removals. You can use tweezers, and literally, if you have to dig into your skin, you need to pull the tick straight out. Mm-hmm. Do not twist it. Do not spin it.
Okay.
Literally...
Put as stress-free as possible.
Save it in a cotton ball and a plastic bag and deliver it to vector control.
Okay.
Yep.
What are some of the early symptoms of Lyme disease? The classic, of course, being the bullseye-shaped rash, but not everyone gets that, or some people are
bitten
in places that you don't see it. What else?
You'll immediately usually have flu-like symptoms, joint pain, neurological symptoms like migraines, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity.
Stomach problems.
Fatigue.
Yeah. My brother had that, and he wasn't diagnosed for a couple of years or more after.
Exactly. It's a very difficult diagnosis, because the symptoms really range based on your own body and what your body's weaknesses are. It plays to those weaknesses. And so everyone is different.
So back to the rally and the protest against the Infectious Disease Society of America. As far as, you know, things they've said, they're concerned about, of course, the chronic use of antibiotics, that this could lead to antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which is not a good thing. How would you counter that argument?
Well, there are current guidelines in place for using long-term antibiotics for conditions such as tuberculosis, rosacea, other tick-borne illnesses, including Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which has become prevalent even in San Diego County. They recommend a course of 3 years of antibiotics for that.
So why do you think, of course, they're not here, so I don't know the answer to this.
Right.
I can only know what I've seen on their website. These are the arguments they put forward. But what do you think the reasons are why they just refuse to change these guidelines, even in the face of this evidence from UC Davis and other research facilities?
Well, they've already been exposed to have numerous conflicts of interest on their board. Some of their members actually have interests in pharmaceutical companies which are developing vaccines and testing for Lyme disease. So I think they're waiting to make some profits off of changing the guidelines.
Are they looking at other treatments that these companies are developing, maybe, besides the antibiotics?
Possibly, yes.
Okay, yes. So we have definitely a conflict of interest.
Yes.
I understand that there were calls for the Infectious Disease Society of America, or IDSA, to put Lyme disease doctors on their board and Lyme disease patient advocates on their board.
Correct. And they actually have been required by the Institute of Medicine to revise their guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the requirements of those revisions include instituting Lyme practicing physicians and Lyme patients. And they have refused to do that.
Wow. So where can people get more information? If they want to, first of all, if they want to get involved in the rally and they want to get more information about this, where can they go for that?
On the web, you can visit lymedisease.org. You can also visit the May Day Project. On Facebook, we have the San Diego Lyme Disease Support Group on Facebook and the May Day Project. All of us have Facebook pages, so pretty easy to find.
Okay, and again, these protests are going to be at the Convention Center Friday and Saturday, October 9th and 10th.
Yes.
I'm going to let you have the final word here. What else would you like our readers to know about Lyme disease, or how it has impacted you and your family?
Well, they say that Lyme disease is difficult to get and easy to treat. And I can tell you, over the last 9 years, the hundreds of patients in our support group have struggled to regain their health. And it is a crisis that needs to be recognized, mm-hmm. and opportunities to improve diagnosis and treatment need to be given.
And those patients include some celebrities. Who are some of them?
Oh, currently Avril Lavigne has actually just created a foundation to help Lyme patients and sufferers. Mm-hmm. Yolanda Foster from the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills mm-hmm. is another famous one. Daryl Hall has been a longtime supporter of the Lyme disease community.
Hall and Oates?
Yes, from Hall and Oates.
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
And the Phones for You founder over in the UK, mm-hmm. Who's
a billionaire.
His entire family has just been diagnosed, including him, with Lyme disease, wow. chronic Lyme disease. And so he himself is donating millions of dollars to research to get some more awareness. And
very good. Yeah. We should also mention that Lyme disease can be prevented if you're hiking out in the backcountry or you're in areas that are known to have ticks. Wearing long sleeves, long pants is one solution, you know, as well as using different kinds of insect repellents. You don't have to slather on the DEET.
That's right. There's lots of great herbal formulas now. They even have embedded clothing that is tick repellent that
really?
you can purchase that lasts through several dozen washings. So yeah. There's always do a tick check, even if you are wearing protective clothing and chemical. Mm-hmm. Have somebody check through your scalp and your back and the nooks and crannies of your body where you can't see yourself.
Can pets get Lyme disease as well?
Absolutely. And that is actually a really good way to know that Lyme disease exists in your area, because the vets all know that Lyme disease is here in San Diego.
Yeah, so check your dogs.
Absolutely.
Also. You had them out on a hiking trail, look them over.
Absolutely.
Elise, I'll let you have the final say. What else would you like our listeners to know?
It is completely preventable and curable. It's not worth taking any chances. It's not worth being in a wheelchair or suffering for your entire life. It's worth just doing tick checks and protecting yourself yeah. and always be your own advocate.
Well, we certainly wish you continued success on your road to recovery, Elise. I hope you'll have a full and complete recovery one of these days.
Thank you.
And I want to thank both of you for joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's major events include the famous annual Oktoberfests held in both La Mesa and El Cajon, and a reenactment festival all about the 1800s. We also have a preview of some upcoming events in October of theater, fairs, and classic cars. Oktoberfest has been a tradition in La Mesa's downtown village since 1942, drawing over 200,000 attendees in recent years. This year, the La Mesa Village Merchants Association hosts the Oktoberfest on Friday and Saturday, October 2nd and 3rd. This year's festival goes back to its roots with a focus on German heritage. The Bavarian Beer Garden Band, Alpine German Dancers, and the El Cajon German Band highlight the entertainment. There will be German food, including bratwurst and real German beer, served up at two beer gardens, plus vendors. For details, and a complete accurate schedule of different events is on our website. Or you can visit lmvma.com. Oktoberfest in El Cajon will be held for two consecutive weekends, Saturday and Sunday, October 3rd and 4th, and Friday through Sunday, October 9th through 11th. A family-friendly festival promoting traditional German culture, including entertainment provided by the band Guggenbach Baum from Baden-Württemberg, Germany, includes folk dances, games, contests, vendor and craft stands, and a kids' fun zone. On Saturday nights, the clubhouse is open for dancing from 8 p.m. to midnight with live German music. Taste authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, and red cabbage, plus a variety of German pastries and pretzels. Soft drinks and adult beverages are sold, featuring a selection of German beers on draft, plus wines in a full bar. There will be raffle giveaways with frequent door prizes, plus a grand prize of a round-trip flight for two to Germany. Free shuttle service runs from the El Cajon Transit Center to German-American Societies at 1017 South Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. For more info, call 619-442-6637. The City of Poway, along with Living History Groups, Shadow River Regulators, and the Apache Canyon Gang, on Saturday, October 3rd, present the annual rendezvous in Poway. History comes to life as guests walk back in time to the 1820s through 1890s. Guests will be able to interact with period-correct historical encampments, meet mountain men, cowboys, pioneers, and experience gunfighting reenactments and mock train robberies. The Boardwalk Craft Market will have beautiful handcrafted arts on display and for sale. Guests can also ride the steam locomotive train for a nominal fee. Now for a preview of coming attractions, Cajon Classic Cruise continues in downtown El Cajon through October 28th from 5 to 8 p.m. with free admission and features an amazing array of cars and different themes each week, every Wednesday, on Main and Magnolia downtown in El Cajon. For information and weekly themes, visit www.cajonclassiccruise.org. Lamplighters Community Theater in La Mesa continues its season with a mystery. Stage Fright opens on October 9th and runs through November 8th. This eerie tale focuses on a drama critic led by an attractive production assistant into a recently discovered 19th century theater. There he is to film an interview for a documentary on actor John Wilkes Booth, who once acted on these very boards. But when the critic, notorious for his venomous reviews, downs a glass of drugged wine, he awakens to find himself tied to a Shakespearean throne on the stage of the old theater beside an actress he has savaged in reviews. She plans to carry out an elaborate plot to murder the critic who destroyed her career, inspiring blood-curdling confessions, all while capturing his most embarrassing revelations on video. For tickets and details, you can visit www.lamplighterslamesa.com. A fair trade gift fair will be held in La Mesa at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on Sunday, October 11th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. This free fair will offer handcrafted baskets, jewelry, clothing, accessories, chocolate, coffee, tea, and more. Fair trade certification means artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world receive fair livable wages for their product or ingredients, offering the public socially responsible shopping. In addition, production standards must protect the environment, build economic sustainability, provide opportunities for education and health care for families, and protect young children from forced labor. La Mesa's Chamber of Commerce will present Fall Fest, a new festival to be held October 16th and 17th at Grossmont Center in La Mesa. This event features country and rock and roll musical artists, including Brent Payne, winner of the Best Country Song of the Year Award at the Hollywood Music Awards in 2012 for his hit single Now and Forever. He's nominated again this year for his song Midnight Prayer. A beer garden, food, and more are also part of the fall festivities at this event. For more information on Fall Fest, visit lamesachamber.net. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County!
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine, and my special guest today is Carmen Bonilla, and she is with WheelchairDancers.org. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
Tell me, how did Wheelchair Dancers organization get started?
The Wheelchair Dancers organization was started back in 2008 by our founder, Chief Executive Officer Beverly Worthing. She was diagnosed with limb girdle muscular dystrophy, and through Sharp Grossman Hospital Foundation, she was encouraged to begin dancing again in a wheelchair.
So she was previously a dancer, and then she became wheelchair bound and started this organization for wheelchair dancers.
Yes, that's exactly right. She began with a few students at a time, and we've grown to sometimes 40 to 60 students at a time.
And this all started in 2008?
Yes, sir, in 2008, and we've gone full force since then.
Now, was this the first ever wheelchair dancers?
It was the first one in the West Coast that I'm aware of, yes, sir. It's an amazing organization. You can check our website, www. Wheelchair Dancers Organization, and check to see our videos and our large contingency of dancers.
And recently you won an award.
Oh, yes, we did. We were awarded the Breaking Away Award of Excellence, which was founded by KUSI and Torrey Pines Bank. We are the first organization recognized for this award.
Wonderful. And what does that mean, the Breakaway Award? What was that?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. We founded this organization, like I said, back in 2008, and we broke away to the point where we are today. And matter of fact, we just had an event on the 29th of August that brought in over 400 individuals to see our organization and to support us.
And I hear you danced on the television.
We sure did. We challenged Brad Perry from KUSI to dance in a wheelchair, and he took us up on the challenge. And they did a whole 2 hours coverage on live Good Morning San Diego.
How did he do?
Oh, he did really well. He is such an amazing person. But we've had such a great time with him. But we had an opportunity to show our public what the organization is all about and the preparations that it takes for us to put on such a big event.
What are the benefits to the wheelchair dancers?
Well, there's different things that a person can get out of it. It all depends on their ability and capability. We concentrate on upper body and core strength. It has increased the balance, the endurance, and even the respiratory control of a person. The range of motion, muscle tone. It has also increased self-confidence. We have dancers that have started with us and today are very open, very smiling, and they're, oh my God, the continuous effort that they put into the classes themselves. We can see the actual change in a person from day one to where they are today.
So it benefits even the walkers.
But of course. I mean, I have to speak from experience. When I first came to the dancing, to one of the classes, I came in as a volunteer. I danced twice with them, and the actual the self-gratification that I get out of being a part of such a great organization, to be able to help someone to reach those goals, gives me an opportunity to catch up with my dancing and my ability to be a giver.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And you're a Latina and you're a dancer.
Well, yes.
So did you find a home here or what?
Oh, well, of course I did. I not only found a home with the dancing, but I also found a home with the past experience that I've had to work with nonprofits and to do something for the community and to give them something that I can afford to do, which is my time, my efforts, and my experience.
The organization has both standing dance volunteers as well as wheelchair-bound volunteers. So you actually have what you call walkers.
Yes.
And rollers.
Yes.
So you're doing walk and roll.
Yeah, you could actually say that's exactly what it is. Wheelchair dancers are confined to wheelchairs. So therefore, we call them rollers because they're rolling around in the dance floor.
Yes.
Walkers are our standers, which are persons like myself that are not confined to a wheelchair, mm-hmm. that are dancing with the partner. So we call them walkers and rollers.
Now, this art of dancing with walkers and rollers, you've brought this to a new level.
We sure have. We have our dance instructor, Joe Torres, has designed dances that are based with the cha-cha, the lindy, and waltz, adapted them to dancing with a roller so that it's easy for us to understand the spacing that it needs to have, the timing that it has. He's very, very knowledgeable in that area. So we're very glad that he's become a standard part of our organization for sure.
What has been the impact of Wheelchair Dancers Organization since its inception and since 2008? And what are some of your accomplishments?
Well, just the fact that we're reaching people with physical challenges by teaching them forms of different dance areas, that's a major one. The changes in their physical, mental, and emotional stability is another one. And I think that we've made a great impact in that. And not just for our rollers, but our walkers as well. Because I, for one, walk away there with a big smile every time I participate.
So what's up in the future for Wheelchair Dancers Organization?
Well, let me tell you. First of all, our classes began on Thursday the 17th, and they go through November the 5th. They are going to be held from 10 until 12. They're going to be at the Park de la Cruz Gymnasium at 3901 Landis Street in San Diego. We're always looking for walkers, so please check our website for those classes. Now, in September 24th at 5 o'clock, we are going to be at the Oregon Pavilion, and we're going to be the first organization to be asked to open up with a 5-minute medley of the Beach Boys songs for the ISA World Adaptive Surfing Championship.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Are you going to do that on the beach?
No. We're doing it in the Oregon Pavilion.
Oh, okay.
As a means of bringing everyone through Balboa Park, which, you know, are celebrating a centennial this year.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's a real honor then.
Yes, it is.
That's wonderful. What is your website one more time?
www.wheelchairdances.org.
Well, that's easy to remember.
And yes, it
says
is.
Everything about you, doesn't it? And it says that you're a nonprofit. We appreciate you coming, and is there anything that we've not covered or that you wanted to say that we haven't got to?
Well, we want everyone to know that we are doing so many different things. December 12th, we're part of the Nice Guys Christmas Party. We've been asked 3 years in a row to come back and be a part of that event. And also in February, we're going to be with the Los Angeles Abilities Adaptive Expo, where we will be performing 3 days in a row, plus we will have a booth at the expo. So we look forward to everyone coming out there and supporting this great organization.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. It's a great honor to be here.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, October 2nd, 2015. I'm Mary Sherman. We're covering stories from coast to coast, including another call for tighter gun laws in the wake of another mass shooting, a national sentencing overhaul announced as some states consider juvenile justice reforms, and a look at the benefits of Medicaid expansion for some southern families. And we begin our news with a devastating story out of Oregon.
Somebody is outside one of the doors, shooting through the door.
A shooter described as a 20-year-old man opened fire on a rural community college campus about 180 miles south of Portland on Thursday, killing 10 people and injuring 7 others. President Barack Obama expressed frustration as he responded to the mass shooting, saying thoughts and prayers are not enough and that stronger gun laws are needed to save lives.
We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work or just will make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence.
Authorities shed no light on the gunman's motive.
A bipartisan group of senators has finally agreed on a plan to dramatically reform the criminal justice system. The bill announced Thursday is hoped to cut mandatory minimum sentences, better prepare inmates for life after prison time, and improve the chances for those leaving incarceration. Many states are reviewing their criminal justice systems, and as Dan Hyman explains, a new nonpartisan coalition called Rise for Youth says the time is right to reform juvenile justice in Virginia.
States around the country have been changing how they treat young offenders. They're relying less on incarceration and more on reforming the youth's behavior while they stay at home or live close by. Newport News Sheriff Gabe Morgan says one problem with juvenile prisons is they can turn young scofflaws into hardened criminals, like a 14-year-old car thief who heard from inmates that he was in prison because he left witnesses.
The difference now is he basically shot each of his victims because he learned he wasn't supposed to leave victims behind. That young man ultimately was put to death.
Morgan says programs that head off bad behavior can sharply reduce arrests and recidivism.
Just as immigrants often have difficulty integrating into American society, military veterans sometimes have trouble reintegrating. But a new program launched in New York aims to help both groups support each other.
Military vets will be recruited to help newcomers studying for the citizenship exam prepare and learn English, while immigrants will volunteer with veterans organizations to help them transition back into civilian life. The statewide effort is a partnership between several agencies, including the Office for New Americans, run by Deputy Secretary of State Jorge Montalvo.
Our program connects veterans with opportunities to teach civics, help with English classes, help people become U.S. citizens. And then on the flip side, we have immigrants who are recruited to volunteer and help with veteran hospitals, VA hospitals, or with other veteran-serving organizations.
I'm Nia Hamm reporting.
Many southern states are not among the 30 that have chosen to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And a new report from the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families finds Georgia's working families are among those who would benefit from expansion, and almost two-thirds of them are employed. Stephanie Carson has more.
Currently, 300,000 Georgians fall into the coverage gap that could be eliminated if the state accepted federal funds to close the gap. Cindy Zeldin is with Georgians for a Healthy Future and says the reluctance to accept federal money is impacting the state across the board.
It's really holding us back in a number of ways. First, it's putting a strain on our health system. And second, it's preventing people from getting the access to care that they need.
As it stands, if a Georgia parent in a family of three earns more than $7,800 annually, but less than $20,000, they earn too much to qualify for Medicaid and too little to qualify for assistance through the health marketplace.
Georgia's children and parents have one of the highest uninsured rates in the country. Folks around the globe are celebrating World Smile Day with acts of kindness and, of course, by flashing a toothy grin. But not everyone may want to share their smile, especially those with problem teeth. In Ohio, 14% of people ages 19 to 64 have an unmet dental problem, according to David Mayware with the Dental Access Now Project.
Whether due to a dental provider shortage or the inability to find a dentist who takes Medicaid or uninsured patients, too many Ohioans just don't have the access to the dental care that they need.
Mayware says access can be expanded by allowing dental therapists to practice as part of the dental team. They can provide preventive and routine care while working under the supervision of a dentist. And now to the west, where mining exploration would be allowed in an area of the Mojave Desert deemed sensitive by environmental advocates. That's if a bill introduced in Congress on Thursday passes.
The California Minerals Off-Road Recreation and Conservation Act by U.S. Representative Paul Cook would allow 150 square miles of mining within the Mojave Trails area. Jim Mattern, who has written several books on the Mojave Desert, opposes the bill.
If you want to see lands remain unscarred for future generations, then Cook's bill is obviously not the way to go.
Mattern prefers a rival bill by Senator Dianne Feinstein that would establish a national monument at Mojave Trails while allowing existing ATV and salt and gold mining operations to continue. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Forecasters say they're becoming optimistic that the Carolinas and the Mid-Atlantic states will avoid the effects of Hurricane Joaquin. The storm battered the Bahamas with torrential rain, powerful winds, and storm surges on Thursday. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report.
California's Secretary of State has confirmed that a $9 billion school construction bond measure has qualified for the November 2016 ballot. The measure is sponsored by Californians for Quality Schools. Money approved in the past by voters for both K-12 and higher education over the last 8 years is nearly tapped out, the Sacramento Bee reports. This bond measure is not the only education funding initiative that voters may be asked to weigh in on. A second initiative has been proposed by the California Teachers Association, along with labor, health, and police unions, that would extend some temporary taxes that voters approved back in 2012, with a portion of that used to also fund education.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they leave Paris?
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. Now here's the buzz. The County Board of Supervisors has unanimously approved new rules Wednesday that will promote beekeeping and local agriculture. Supervisors approved a new tiered beekeeping ordinance that will allow beekeeping hobbyists and businesses to keep bees and hives closer to roads, property lines, and homes in unincorporated areas of the county, but still far enough away to keep people safe. Bees not only produce honey, they are an essential part of plant reproduction, carrying pollen from plant to plant. Commercial beekeeping businesses pollinate avocado, broccoli, onion, fruit, and seed crops across San Diego County. Biologists and beekeepers worldwide have been sounding alarm since 2006 that bees are disappearing, with blame placed on pesticides and parasitic mites. County supervisors wanted to find ways to promote beekeeping, economic development, and protect both bees and the public. The new beekeeping ordinance creates three tiers of distance regulations for beekeepers. Current regulations require everyone, small and large beekeepers, to keep their hives 100 feet from roads and 600 feet, that's two full football fields, away from homes. The new ordinance will allow backyard beekeeping hobbyists in general to keep two hives within 25 feet of roads and property lines, 35 feet from neighboring homes, and 150 feet from sensitive sites where there may be small children, the elderly, animals, or others who could be physically challenged. Small commercial beekeeping companies will be allowed to have up to 20 hives, but the setbacks will be farther. While large commercial beekeeping companies will be able to have unlimited hives, set back 100 feet from roads, 300 feet from homes, and 450 feet from sensitive places. The ordinance will also institute a beekeeping education and outreach program. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who brought the issue to the board, said, "I would urge all the beekeepers, the current ones and future ones, to go make that honey." The ordinance is set to be heard again by the board on September 30th for a second reading and will take effect in 30 days if the board approves that second reading. The county's agriculture weights and measures officials said they would return to the board in 2018 to update supervisors on how the ordinance is working. Department officials at the direction of the board said they will also continue looking for chances to lease county-owned properties to beekeepers. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.